గురవే నమః శ్రీ చైతన్య మనోభీష్టం స్థాపితం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూపః కదా మహ్యం దదాతి స్వపదాంతికం వందేహం శ్రీ గురో శ్రీయుత పదకమలం శ్రీగురూన్ వైష్ణవాంశ్చ శ్రీరూపాం సాగ్రజాతాం సహగణ రఘునాథాన్వితం తం సజీవం సావధూతం పరిజన సహితం కృష్ణ చైతన్య దేవం శ్రీరాధా కృష్ణ పాదాన్ సహగణ లలితా శ్రీ విశాఖాన్వితాంశ్చ హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధో దీనబంధో జగత్పతే గోపేశ గోపికాకాంత రాధాకాంత నమోస్తుతే తప్త కాంచన గౌరాంగీ రాధే వృందావనేశ్వరీ వృషభానుసుతే దేవీ ప్రణమామి హరిప్రియే వాంఛాకల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపాసింధుభ్య ఏవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః. నమో విష్ణుపాదాయ కృష్ణపృష్ఠాయ భూతలే శ్రీమతే భక్తివేదాంత స్వామినితి నామినే. నమస్తే సరస్వతే దేవే గౌరవాణీ ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాదీ త్యదేశతారిణి జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర శ్రీవాసది గౌరభక్తవృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే.
హరే కృష్ణ. సో వి వెల్కమ్ ఆల్ ద డివోటీస్ టు దిస్ సండే ఫీస్ట్ ప్రోగ్రామ్ ఇన్ ద ఆఫ్టర్నూన్. టుడే విల్ డిస్కస్ సంథింగ్ అబౌట్ ద ఆర్ట్ ఆఫ్ హ్యాండ్లింగ్ కాంట్రాస్టింగ్ ఇమోషన్స్. ఆల్ ఆఫ్ అస్ హ్యావ్ ఇమోషన్స్ అండ్ మెనీ ఆఫ్ దీస్ ఇమోషన్స్ సమ్ టైమ్స్ గో అప్ అండ్ డౌన్, ద చేంజ్. సో ఇఫ్ యూ వాంట్ టు రియలీ స్టే హ్యాపీ ఇన్ ద లాంగ్ రన్ ఇన్ దిస్ వరల్డ్, దెన్ this will help us. So if you can think over it, then in this human form of life we have access to the full spectrum of emotions, from moroseness, depression, to equanimity, and then so on to joy, happiness, ecstasy. Yes, so from negative emotions like depression to neutral emotions like steadfastness, equipoisedness, two positive emotions where a person feels overjoyed, he is happy, we have access to all these emotions. We definitely have some physical needs, but we cannot deny that we also have these emotional needs. As far as animals are concerned or lower species are concerned, they also experience emotions, but the physical needs very much overpower their emotional needs. For instance, you know, you can have the king of the jungle, the lion, trapped in a cage, and you can safely assume, keeping all the locks locked, that he will stay there. So there could be some resistance from the king of the jungle. I am supposed to be the king, I am supposed to rule. One roar and the birds fly away, the deer start running. And that same lion who had his command over such a big area of the jungle, is found in a zoo, in a circus. Good for nothing. He's almost reduced to some kind of a oversized rat. You indicate to him, he has to stand up. You indicate to him, he has to stand on his 2 feet. You indicate to him, he'll sit down within your grasp. So he also has his emotions, is it not? Definitely he is ruled in the jungle and now he's trapped in a cage. So he has his emotions. But he can't work on those emotions. Why? Because his belly is being controlled by the zookeeper. The ringmaster of the circus, he controls the diet of that lion. So he knows, if I act funny, even to the smallest extent, my food supply will be stopped. And if my food supply is stopped, I can't survive. So that is how, when they trap these powerful animals like elephants, lions, tigers, for the first 1 or 2 weeks, they just stop feeding them. And that big growling form of that huge, ferocious animal is reduced to a whining little form. Say, give me some food. So, if you just take care of the physical needs of the animals, you can very nicely control them. Try doing that with human beings. Someone in your life, just give them proper food, just give them proper water to drink, roti, kapda, makan, give them a shelter over their head. Don't talk to them. Never reciprocate with them. Never smile at them. Do this for 1 week and you know what I'm talking about. There's a backlash. Yes, there are accusations. Don't you care for me? Don't you love me? Don't you acknowledge my existence? So beyond all the physical needs, the humans also have emotional needs. And we cannot deny that. One time when a baby camel was talking to the mother camel, and the baby camel is saying, "Mother, why do we have these long legs?" So the mother camel replied, "You know what? Because many times in the desert, the sand becomes very hot. So we need to have some distance from the sand. So because of the long legs, the whole body, the whole torso is high up in the air. So then it is protected from the heat of the sand." So he says, "Oh, that's how it is." Says, "Mother, why do we have such huge stomachs?" So the mother camel says, "You know what, sometimes in the desert, there is no water source for months together. So we have a huge storage system in our belly, which can store something like 200 liters of water." Says, "Oh, that is why we are like this." Says, "Mother, why do we have these transparent eyelids?" So she says, "In the desert, many times there is a sandstorm. So the sand is blowing in the air. And if you want to keep walking, then you should have to see. So to protect your eyes from getting hurt by the blowing sand, God has given you these transparent eyelids." So after hearing these three answers, the baby camel asks the mother, "If this is the case, then what the hell are we doing in this cold Delhi zoo?" Yes. So this is an imaginary conversation, but we can understand the frustration of somebody. He says, "All my physical needs are met, but what about my emotions?" There was once a very famous joker who was very famous for making his faces and make people laugh. So this is a real story. In Italy, he was Pagliacci. So in that town where the circus is going on, one person who was suffering a lot of mental stress, he went to a psychiatrist and he said, "I need some help. I am in great depression. Please help me." So the psychiatrist said, "Okay, take these pills. Come back to me after a week." So after he comes back, he asks him, "Any improvement?" He says, no improvement. I'm still in stress. I need some help." So 1 or 2 visits like this, and a psychiatrist understands this is like a special case beyond me. So the psychiatrist says, "Okay, no, my medicines have given up now. One solution that I have is, you heard about this famous circus that has come? So there is this famous clown there, who can make you laugh even if you may be the saddest person on earth. So go to this show today evening and he'll make you laugh and all your problems of depression will go." So this person who's visiting the psychiatrist, he hangs his head low like this. And he says, I am Pagliacci. I am that person. So you see how, you know, this clown, he could have just pretended his whole life. He could have just made a false show in the circus, earned money, carried on with his life. And people are getting happy by watching his strange faces. But at some point in time, all of us have undergone this feeling, what is the use of pretension? How long will we pretend? Finally, we'll have to accept reality. So this Pagliacci, he got the reality. He said, I am myself sad inside. So even if I am falsely making people happy, but how long will this continue? One day the sadness inside will come out. So I want a solution for this. So this is what I meant by saying that humans, not only their physical needs have to be fulfilled, but their emotional needs also have to be fulfilled. Any one of us here who has his physical needs fulfilled, but if he is facing emotional vacuum in his heart, you know, he feels some kind of a hollowness in his life. His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was recently speaking in one class. He was saying how many powerful people, why is there an obsession with things in their lives? This is because they have a vacuum in their hearts. So they are trying to cover up that vacuum in their hearts with things of this world, with people of this world. They try to become a controller of others. So something like that. So if we are so much dependent on emotional fulfillment, then we should also understand the art of fulfilling those emotions, the art of handling emotions. If we do not know this art, we'll just end up satisfying our bellies, clothing ourselves nicely, having a big, huge home, but with no people inside it. And then we'll all be lonely. So this is very important for us. Sometimes, I don't know if you have experienced this, but I have seen this. There are small kids in somebody's home and they undergo these frequent mood swings. They don't obviously know that it is a mood swing. They are just being natural. So, you know, the kid comes from school and the mother says, so are you hungry? So he says, yes, yes, I am very hungry. What do you have for me? Then he says, okay, just get ready. I'll make something hot ready for you. And after 5 minutes, when the mother gets that dish out, piping hot dish, and she puts it, she's looking for that kid. Where is he? And she sees him running off to play. Say, hey, wait, you're supposed to eat. He says, no, my mood has changed. Now I'm going to play. Has this happened? Have you seen this? So this is one small example. Now if this happens with kids, you're happy. You say, yes, kitna achha bachcha hai mera. And he's so eager to play and all that. Imagine if this happens with a grown-up person in your family. He comes from office, then you say, are you hungry? He says, yes, I am very hungry. Then you prepare something for him, and then you see him working on the computer. Then you say, hey, what happened? You know, you were hungry. He says, no, now I am not hungry. It puts you off, is it not? You say, I have something for you. I am trying to offer you something. And there is no reciprocation from your side. One time one person, he came out of a library, and he looked very frustrated. He had a big fat book in his hand and he banged it on that librarian's desk and he said, what a useless book. He said, it's only full of characters and no story. So the librarian also thought, what is this big fat book all about? So she opened the book and checked out and she told that person, hey, this is a telephone directory. So, you don't know how to handle such people. Just check it out, yes? In fact, I would say that, we are scared of such people. If somebody is unpredictable, you are constantly chanting prayers when dealing with that person. And if that person happens to be your authority, some boss in your company or some elderly person in your family, it's like a very tough situation. So we wish that people were more predictable. We wish that we would be able to understand and handle emotions of people in a way that our own emotions are fulfilled. But it's a tough job. Yes. We'll see from the lives of one of our acharyas that it appears that he is also undergoing these kind of mood swings. So mood swings by an ordinary person of this world, a conditioned person of this world, it is understood. is controlled by the modes of nature. But did you use the word Acharya? Yes, I did use the word Acharya. In fact, he's not just one of the Acharyas, he's one of the 12 Mahajans. Say, hey, wait. One of the 12 Mahajans. We are supposed to walk the path of the Mahajans. The Mahajans will teach us how to execute bhakti. And are you saying that just like the conditioned souls of this world who keep changing their moods, the Mahajans also change their moods? I thought the Mahajans are beyond the modes. So we'll have some discussion on this theme today. So this is 7th canto, 9th chapter, shloka number 43. 9th chapter of 7th canto is the prayers offered by Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad is one of the 12 Mahajans. So he's singing, he's offering his prayers to Lord Narasimhadev. He's saying, Naivo dvije paradurattya vaitaranyas tvadvirya gayana mahamritamagna chitta shochetato vimukhacheta saindriyartham maya sukhaya bharamudvahato vimudhan. So Prahlad, in this very wonderful prayer, in the first line of that prayer, he says, Na udvije. I do not have any problem. In Hindi or in Marathi, there is this word called udveg. Bahut udveg ho raha hai. So something similar to that. Na udvije. I do not have any problem in my life. So very good. Why do not you have any problem in your life? He says, Tvadvirya gayana mahamritamagna chitta. I do not have any problem in my life, Lord Narasimhadev, because I am completely satisfied in singing your glories. Virya, gayana, maha, amrita, magna, chitta. I am so absorbed in singing your glories. There are unlimited glories. I do not face any problems in my life. I am completely stress-free. I am completely happy. So you offer your obeisances to him. So very nice. We look up to you. And right there in the same shloka, in the next line, Prahlad is saying something very contradictory. What does he say? Shoche tato vimukhacheta sa indriyartham. He says, shoche is connected to the root word shok. So in Hindi also we speak, shok ho gaya. Shok ho gaya matlab, bahut dukh hai. So he says, shoche tato vimukhacheta sa. Vimukha is that person who's turned his face away from God, who's a non-devotee, who does not believe in God. So in one line, he's saying, I do not have any problems in my life because I'm constantly singing your glories. And right there in the next line, in the same shloka, he says, but I have one very big problem. I'm completely in pain. Shok ho raha hai mujhe. Kya shok ho raha hai aapko? By seeing those people in this world who have turned their face away from you, why have they turned their face away from you? Maya sukhaya bharam. They have decided to lift the weight, the burden of imaginary happiness, illusory happiness. So if we are having some happiness in our life and it is giving us some pleasure and we are carrying the burden of that, we can understand. Yes, no pains without gains. No gains without pains. But Prahlad is saying, my problem is that I can see people are having the burden of illusory happiness. There is no happiness actually. They are just carrying it. One example that comes to my mind is recently when I was traveling somewhere, I saw this. Probably you also have seen this. There is a big, huge motorcycle. Nowadays they are very common and they are very fashionable. And they make a lot of sound. So, doop, 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 like that. Yes. And somehow inadvertently I have seen that the person who is riding this big, fat motorcycle is like a very lean and thin guy. Did you see that? I don't know if I am the only one, but I saw this happening twice or thrice. It is a misfit. At least you should have that kind of physique to ride this kind of a motorcycle. Yes, in the West, you know, they have these motorcycle gangs. And they actually have that kind of a physique. In India, when we are trying to imitate, you know, the person is lean and thin, you know, he is trying to cover his whole body because he does not have any muscles. There, you know, those people who have these motorcycle gangs, they are almost, you know, they expose their arms and all that. So it looks very strange. So you know, this is what I remembered when I was reading this. Is Maya Sukhaya. This is huge burden that they are carrying. And actually it's very painful for them. You know, they have to hold that motor. So even though it's running, it's not that it's just auto. You have to steer it. You have to take left and right. So Maya Sukhaya. So when you see such kind of a person, you feel pity, is it not? should I help you? Not to drive. Yes. Should I help you get a better motorcycle? Yes. That was the point. So, you know, the point was that it appears, what happened to you? You just spoke now, there is no distress in your life. And right there you are saying, there is big distress in my life, seeing the Vimukha Chetasa. So let's go deeper into this. Is Prahlad also having a mood swing? In my early college days, I had, you know, come across an English novel. It's a very famous English novel. The novel's name is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So this, the setting is in some English town, and it starts with one Dr. Jekyll, who's a very compassionate doctor. He's a very intelligent doctor. He's a kind-hearted person who always gives free medicine. And he also spends a lot of time in his research lab. He's trying to come up with medicines to help people. And there's a lot of description about his kindness and how he's a very soft-hearted person. And then suddenly, there is news about some kind of a crazy killer in that town who kills people at night. So on one side is this description of Dr. Jekyll, and another side is this ghastly description of bodies being found who have been, you know, killed in a very, in a horrible way. So as the story progresses, then, you know, you are puzzled. Is there some connection or something? And then towards the end, it is revealed that actually this Dr. Jekyll, when he's doing research one day in the lab, he mixes some chemicals and something happens, there's an accident, and he ends up drinking one of those potions that he makes. And that potion, it transforms him into some kind of a giant, cruel monster. So at night time, this Dr. Jekyll is transformed into a monster, and he goes out and he has to kill somebody to satisfy that urge. So in psychiatry, there is something called as a bipolar disorder. Bipolar disorder is just like a person is at one pole of emotions at one time, and at another time he is at another end of the emotion. So something like this. Dr. Jekyll is very soft-hearted during the daytime, and equally so, he is that much ferocious, that much cruel-hearted at night time. So he is also undergoing this change of emotions. Yes, the theme of the class is handling contrasting emotions. So then we feel, you know, Prahlad, is he also undergoing something like this? Is he also a victim of the bipolar disorder? So one important difference between Prahlad's change of mood and this bipolar disorder is Dr. Jekyll is a kind-hearted person during daytime and Mr. Hyde is very cruel-hearted at night time. It is at two different times. It is not at the same time. So if Dr. Jekyll would be kind-hearted in one moment and the next moment is evil, then we could compare him to Prahlad. No, Prahlad is not like that. It's not that Prahlad is showing, I do not have any distress in the daytime, and then he says, I have a lot of distress at night time. Nothing like that. Right there at the same moment. It is as if, just to give an example, you know, you have a face and then you smile like this. And then the next moment, you start crying. So bipolar disorder means you laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh, you know, laugh for hours together, and then suddenly something goes wrong, and then you suddenly start crying, and then people don't know what happened. So there is a difference. It's not exactly a bipolar disorder. Is Prahlad a split personality? No, Prahlad is not a split personality. Why? We'll try to go deeper. When we read these descriptions how Prahlad at the same moment is happy and unhappy both. He's happy, no distress. And he's unhappy, yes, lot of distress. One thing that can come to our mind is we say, you know what, this is impossible. It is not possible that a person can be happy and unhappy at the same time. Either he's lying or the description is lying, the Bhagavatam is lying. So if Prahlad is lying, he cannot be one of the 12 Mahajans. And if the description is lying, this description cannot find its way into these pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam, then it could be one of those Nana Nani ki kahaniya. But it is there in the Bhagavatam and it is about Prahlad. So another response that we can have is, let us learn something from this. Mahajano yena gata sapanta. So Prahlad is showing us this pantha, that Prahlad is having two contrasting emotions at the same time, simultaneously in the same heart. How is this possible? So interestingly, in the same chapter, 7.9.15 and 16, 15th and the 16th shloka, again Prahlad shows this kind of behavior. He speaks something and then in the next shloka, he speaks totally contradictory. So in 15th, he says, Naham bibhemite ati bhayanakasya. He's saying, Naham bibhemi. Oh my dear Lord Narasimha Dev, I am not at all fearful. Bibhemi. Ati bhayanakasya. Your form is so fear generating. But I am not afraid of this form. So when Lord Narasimha Dev appeared out of anger, the primary emotion that Lord Narasimha Dev had when he appeared out of that pillar, when Hiranyakashipu punched in that pillar, was that of anger. So all of us, we know Gopinath, Krishna, this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So Krishna is supremely beautiful. He is the source of beauty. Krishna is supremely intelligent. Aishwaryasya, Samagrasya, Viryasya, Yashashriya. We know 6 opulences of Krishna. He is supremely intelligent, supremely beautiful, supremely strong, supremely famous, supremely knowledgeable, and supremely renounced. So all 6 opulences in full. When the same Krishna gets the emotion of anger, what can we say about that anger? So just like he is supremely beautiful, supremely knowledgeable, supremely strong, when he becomes angry, he is also supremely angry. So when Krishna becomes supremely angry, then he becomes Lord Narasimha Dev. So just imagine, if any one of us in our families, we have somebody who is angry, we know what a terror it is. So some students, when they get less marks, and when they want to approach their father, and if that father is some kind of an angry person, then you have to count your stars. Or if there is some teacher in your college, and the teacher is very angry, then you have to think twice before approaching that person. Now multiply the anger of these people in this world by infinity. Unlimited anger, and that anger is in the form of Lord Narasimha Dev as he jumps out of the pillar. Now can you imagine how much terror Lord Narasimha Dev created when he gave out that loud roar as he jumped out of that pillar? Anger personified. Nobody else is more angry than Lord Narasimha Dev. So he has a lion's face, the eyes are pointed like this, the mane, the hair are just moving around, and the sound is so strong, it is described that the wives of many demons, I mean, USA, United States of Asuras, some of them were pregnant. So just by hearing the loud roar of Lord Narasimha Dev, they had a miscarriage. They just dropped that child. This was the loud roar of Lord Narasimha Dev. When he was shaking his hair, his head was appearing to be somewhere in the clouds or something. The teeth were sharp. And you know, he's like roaring. His nails are very strong. So when he appears and he does his business, he kills Hiranyakashipu in his own way. Then all the demigods are there because all the demigods are watching this. This is a big, important duel between Hiranyakashipu, who is the greatest of demons, and Lord Vishnu, who has appeared as Lord Narasimha Dev. So when they watch it, they are watching, thinking, now what will happen? And it is described sometimes Lord Narasimha Dev lets go Hiranyakashipu. He lets him go. He does not overpower him completely. So just like a cat sometimes catches a mouse and plays with the mouse for some time. Sometimes a cat just lets go of the mouse, then mouse goes here and there, again catches it. That is how it plays. So Lord Narasimha Dev was playing with Hiranyakashipu, and it is described, when Lord Narasimha Dev would let go Hiranyakashipu, then the demigods would heave a sigh of relief. Will Hiranyakashipu win? And then again Narasimha Dev would go. So just think about it, you know, it's like a very important thing that is going on. And finally, Lord Narasimha Dev kills Hiranyakashipu. And when it is killed, now everything is assured. Now there will be peace. Now we will get our positions back. You sit on that asana, I will sit on this asana. Then they remember the Supreme Lord has appeared. So when the Supreme Lord appears, we should welcome him. We should garland him. So now they bring a garland. So now the question is, who will garland Lord Narasimhadev? So in English there is a saying, who will bell the cat? So similarly now the question is, who will garland Lord Narasimhadev? So now they are thinking, so they become very humble and they say, no, I'm not a very, I'm not a great devotee. You are a great devotee. You should get the credit of garlanding the Lord. So you, yes. So now everyone is passing on the buck. They say, no, you, yes. So everyone says, pehle aap. And Lord Narasimhadev is just waiting. So finally it comes to Lord Brahma. Now Lord Brahma, he is like the greatest of the demigods. He is the father of all the demigods. So he also looks at Lord Narasimhadev and he sees all that ferocious form, the source of all anger. And then he says, well, you know, sometimes the father wants to train the children. So now the next person who can do this is Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva is in charge of annihilation. He's in charge of pralaya. He's in charge of destruction. And destruction always happens when you become angry. So if you're not angry, you cannot destroy somebody. You cannot destroy something. So if Lord Shiva is in charge of destruction of this universe, it's very clear that towards the end of the lifespan of the universe, he becomes very angry. And that's how he destroys the universe. So then, you know, they are thinking, Lord Shiva, you know, he is in charge of the department of anger. Here is also anger. So, you know, probably this can be a good combination. So they request Lord Shiva, so you also become angry? Yes. And then when you become angry, the whole universe is destroyed. So probably it's easier for you to relate to him because it's very difficult for us to relate to him. But then Lord Shiva says, I become angry, but not like this. This is adbhut. This is incomprehensible anger. So now nobody is ready. So then they think, okay, let's request Mother Lakshmi. She is always the companion of Lord Narasimhadev. So they look towards Lord Goddess Lakshmi. Mother Lakshmi. Mother Lakshmi also says, you know, I have seen my husband many times and but this is the peak. So I can't do it. So when we are reading this shloka, you know, we have to also understand the background of this shloka. The background of this shloka is because of his unlimited anger exhibited, none of the demigods who are very close to the Supreme Lord, who are the servants of the Supreme Lord, none of them are ready to take the risk to even approach this personality. That is how angry he is. And that is how fearful the form of Lord Narasimhadev is. There is blood spattered all over his face. There is a garland of intestines hanging from his neck. In Russia one time there was this court case and one person filed a case against ISKCON saying that, you know, these people, they worship some kind of a murderer. Just look at this photograph, it's all red, you know, this blood spattered, you know, the one person is like dead like this, and they are all worshipping him. So then, you know, it was to be explained that yes, you know, he is murdering, but the person who is murdered is a criminal. So sometimes the police has to murder the criminal. Okay, then we understand. So cultural, you know, if there's a cultural difference, sometimes you have to explain these things. So the point is, none of these demigods are comfortable approaching Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Mother Lakshmi is not approaching, and that personality, Prahlad, fearlessly goes and garlands the Lord. And it is in this context that he says, Naham bibhemite ati bhayanakasya. Your form is so frightful, none of these personalities are ready to come close to you, but my dear Lord, just like a cub of a tiger is never afraid of the mother tiger, I am not afraid of you because I am your devotee. The bhakta vatsalya of the Supreme Lord is his prime quality. So you may be ferocious to Hiranyakashipu and you may be ferocious to somebody else. Rest assured, you will never ever harm your own devotee. You will never allow harm to come to your devotee. Declare it boldly, O Arjuna, that my devotee never perishes. Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashati. So as a cub is not afraid of the mother, the whole jungle may be afraid of the mother tiger. Why should I be afraid? So he is saying in 15th shloka, naham bibhemi. And in the next shloka he says, trastosmyaham kripanavatsala dussahogra samsara chakra kadanad grasatam pranita. In the 16th shloka he says, but I am very much afraid of something. So hey, just now you said you are not afraid of the personification of fear. The greatest personalities are afraid of this personality and you are not afraid. And now you are saying, but I am dussahogra, I am very much afraid of something. So you decide what you are. Yes. Sometimes you say you are happy, sometimes you say, but I am not happy. Sometimes you say, I am not at all afraid of the source of all fear. Now you are saying, I am very much afraid. So what are you afraid of? Say, samsara chakra. I am very much afraid of this material world. Why are you afraid of this material world? I am afraid of this material world because the primary consciousness of people in this material world is that of envy towards you. People in the material world criticize you. People in the material world fight you with weapons. People in this material world fight you with pens. They write big fat books. God does not exist. They write newspaper articles. God is not there. Some so-called saintly people even make a claim, I am God. So at least the atheists, they are a little sensible. They are saying, because I am not able to see God, God does not exist. So you can talk with him. But an ordinary person, two teeth are falling from here. And then he says, I am God. And then if you go close to him, he will say, not only am I God, I can also make you God. So, Prahlad is saying, I am not afraid of personified fear and anger, but I am afraid of this material world. I am afraid of dussanga. Satsanga is what we are all cherishing, but this bad association is so fearful for me. Mujhe is dunya mein kisi cheez ka dar nahi lagta, lekin buri sangat ka bahut dar lagta hai mujhe. Prahlad is saying like this. In one of the shlokas describing Madhavendra Puri, it is described, Paramavirakta Maunis Sarvatra Udasina. I'm just trying to recollect. Gramya Katha Bhaye Dvitiya Sangahina. Madhavendra Puri is described as Paramavirakta Mauni Sarvatra Udasina. Madhavendra Puri is always detached from the things of this world. And then it is mentioned, Gramya Katha Bhaye. So when I read that, I was thinking, what are the different kinds of fears that I have read in this world? So I have read about fear of death. I have also read about fear of public speaking. Some people have fear of heights. There are different kinds of fears that people have. I'm sure you also may have some other fears. Some people are afraid of cockroaches. And so on. Madhavendra Puri is described as Gramya Katha Bhaye. So we sometimes feel, you know, these pure devotees, they are free from all bhaye. These pure devotees are free from all fear. No, Madhavendra Puri had one bhaye. He had one big fear. What is that? Gossip. He is not afraid of death. He is not afraid of public speaking. He is not afraid of anything. He is not afraid of Lord Narasimhadev also. But he is afraid of gossip. What is that? Anything that is not favorable to God consciousness, Madhavendra Puri has a Gramya Katha Bhaye. So here Prahlad Maharaj is saying, I am not afraid of you, but I am afraid of this mentality of this material world, which is always averse to you. So think about it. This Prahlad, in the same chapter, in the same prayers, he is showing two instances where he has two contrasting emotions simultaneously in his heart. Prahlad is a Vaishnava. Vaishnava means he is a follower of Vishnu. So Prahlad has to learn this somewhere from Lord Vishnu. So where did Prahlad pick this up from? Where did he learn this from? How did he get this art of handling these contrasting emotions in his heart? So we'll check if, you know, Krishna also has something like this. So in Gita, 11th chapter, 19th shloka, Krishna's form is being described by Arjun. So the shloka goes, Anadi madhyantam ananta viryam ananta vahum shashi surya netram. Arjun is describing the virat roop of Lord Krishna and he is saying, Anadi, it is beginningless. Madhya, it is without a middle. Antam, it is without an end. So he's saying this form is all encompassing. I cannot see where it begins, where it ends. Everywhere I see, it is only Krishna's universal form. And then he says, Ananta Bahum, there are unlimited hands of this universal form. And then he says, Shashi Surya Netram. So Shashi is the moon and Surya is the sun. Both are objects that give light, but they have some contrast. What is that? Sunlight is heating. Sunlight, if you walk too much in the sun, it actually saps you of your energy. If you ever walk in the moon, you become invigorated by moonlight. You become rejuvenated by moonlight. You become stronger. If you are fatigued and you walk in the moonlight, you gain strength. Moonlight is cooling. It is refreshing. Sunlight is energy sapping. It is hurting to the body. So, Krishna's two eyes are being described as Shashi Surya Netram. Arjuna is saying, one of your eyes is like the sun and one of your eyes is like the moon. This is a big contrast. So, how it is like this? So, there are two aspects of Krishna. Paritranaya sadhunam, vinashaya cha dushkritam. Contrast. Why do you come to this world? I come to this world to protect my devotees and to annihilate the miscreants, Krishna says. This is also a contrast. So either you decide you want to come, you want to protect the devotees or you want to kill the miscreants. So here also, Shashi Surya Netram, it represents two qualities of Krishna. What is that? In Sanskrit this is called as Anugraha and Nigraha. Anugraha means compassion, mercy. So the moon, the Shashi form, the Shashi eye of Krishna represents Anugraha of Krishna. So on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, it is not that everyone is a demon. On the battlefield of Kurukshetra, there are some devotees. The Pandavas are there. Drishtadyumna is there. So many people on the side of the Pandavas. They are all devotees. But there are also some demons. So Krishna's form is indicating he is beginningless, without a middle, without an end, Ananta Bahum. But when the demons look towards the Virat Roop, they see the Surya form. They see the Surya eye. They see the Nigraha. Nigraha means restriction form, the restriction aspect of Krishna. So when a non-devotee comes to the temple and looks at the deity, all he can see is stone. And then sometimes he asks, no, all of you are so gaga, you start dancing and jumping and singing glories. But you know, it's a stone. You people are idol worshippers. And at that same moment, next to that atheist, next to that envious person is standing a pure devotee who's folding his hands and is offering his heartfelt prayers to Krishna, and he can see Krishna. Pratima nahi sakshat tumi Vrajendra Nandan. So Krishna has this unique power. Simultaneously, depending on your emotions, he can manifest himself or he can hide himself. Krishna's vision is state specific. It depends on the state of our consciousness. So if we ever come to the temple feeling some kind of hatred towards Krishna, all we will see is stone, marble, metal and so on. But if we ever come to the temple with a positive feeling that, you know, I want to surrender my life to you, you are the center of my life, we will actually see Krishna here. There are unlimited stories of how deities have reciprocated with devotees, but the first step was taken always by the devotees. So coming back to Shashi Surya Netram, the Surya Netra is giving fear to the demons on Kurukshetra. Demons are not just, you know, these huge creatures with big bellies, coppery hair and red eyes and, you know, teeth protruding out and say, ha, 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 ha. No, demon does not mean just in the form. Demon means any person who has that devil-like heart. Kamsa may not look like one of these typical demons, but he has a demoniac mentality. He wants to kill God. He wants to hurt the devotees of God. So when we say demons, it does not necessarily mean that everyone has a huge form. It means the heart is against Krishna and against the principles of Krishna. So when the demons look towards the Virat Roop, they see the Surya Netra, they feel fear of Krishna. And when the devotees simultaneously at that very moment when they look towards Krishna, they see the Shashi Netra of Krishna. And they feel, yes, as long as Krishna is there, protection is assured, no problem. So Krishna also has this wonderful ability of handling Anugraha and Nigraha simultaneously. Another example of this is, one of the Sri Vaishnava Acharyas of South India, he mentions this, that as Lord Narasimhadev is ripping open Hiranyakashipu, in one of his eyes, he's looking at Hiranyakashipu as he's killing him, and he's actually showing all his anger towards Hiranyakashipu. So half of his face is giving a lot of fear to Hiranyakashipu, and Prahlad is standing close by, so half of his face is assuring benediction to Prahlad. So this is again, we see how Lord Krishna and Lord Narasimha both can handle two contrasting emotions simultaneously. Many times in the Gita, in the first few chapters, there is a conversation between Krishna and Arjun. Then towards the end, Krishna speaks more and Arjun just asks a few questions. But in the first chapter, almost Krishna does not speak a single shloka. He starts speaking in the second chapter. So if you have read the first two or three chapters, then you will see many times Arjun proposes something and Krishna shoots it down. Krishna says, no, this is nonsense, this is useless. One time he calls Arjun a panditaha. He says, you are fool number one, you are proposing something. You are saying that actually the personality is the body, but a real pandit, a real intelligent man understands that we are not the body, we are spirit soul. Second time when Arjun proposes something, the Krishna says, klebhyam masma gama partha. You know what is klebhya? Klebhya means those people in this world who are neither females nor males. The third gender. So in ordinary dealings, no, it's not considered very honorable to be called the third gender. So now Krishna is calling Arjun, who is a very powerful personality, who has defeated Lord Shiva in one battle, who went to the heavenly planets and he fought the Nivata Kavachas also there, and he destroyed the Nivata Kavachas, who were not destroyed by any of the demigods. That powerful personality, Krishna is saying, klebhyam. There's a big, huge, strong, impactful slap. So Arjuna is proposing something and Krishna just slaps him. He says, no, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is not the truth. But at one point of time in the conversation, in sixth chapter, Krishna proposes something, Arjuna objects to that, and Krishna, instead of retaliating, instead of saying, again, nonsense, you fool, you coward, or any other strong word, Krishna says, yes, what you are saying is true. Does anybody know this? Krishna tells Arjun, a devotee should always control his mind. And Arjun says, chanchalami mana Krishna. He says, Krishna, you know, you want me to control my mind, I cannot control my mind. Tell me to control the wind, I will control the wind, but don't ask me to control the mind. And what does Krishna say? Just now Krishna has advised Arjun, you better control your mind. And Arjun says, I cannot control my mind. And previously when there was a conflict between Krishna's words and Arjun's words, Krishna has used very heavy words. But this time, Krishna says, yes, what you are saying is true. Asamshayam mahabaho. Mano durani graham chalam. Actually, the mind cannot be controlled so easily. So then some of the inexperienced, immature readers of the Gita, they will say, this is interesting. I thought only people of this world are duplicitous. Now it turns out Krishna is also duplicitous. He just now spoke, you should control the mind. Without controlling the mind, it's not possible. And Arjun said, not possible. Then he says, yes, actually it's very difficult to control. So why did you say? Why did you advise me? Are you checking my attention? Well, are you listening to what I'm saying very attentively? So when you say something, sometimes in the Bhagavatam it is like this. The Shukdev Goswami speaks, you know, the best form of counteracting sins is actually prayaschitta. So then Parikshit says, no, how can prayaschitta be there? Well, prayaschitta is like manne kunjara shauchavat. It is like the bathing of the elephant. He says, yes, actually prayaschitta is not the best. Then he offers another. And then why does he do that? He's just checking if the listener is listening attentively. So is it like this? Is Krishna checking the attentiveness of Arjun? No. So to understand why Krishna spoke something and Arjun said, not possible. And Krishna agrees to that. Let us consider one example. So think of a doctor who's sitting in his clinic and one patient walks in and he says, "Doctor, my back is aching." So the doctor inspects him and says, "Okay, I've diagnosed. The medicine for you is this medicine. So the yellow pill in the morning, the blue pill in the afternoon, and the red pill in the evening." And the patient says, "Not possible." He rejects that medicine. So he says, "Why?" He says, no, my schedule is so busy, I do not have time to take all these medicines and all." So now, what would you expect the doctor to say? He's offering him medicine for a disease that is really troubling the patient, and the patient says, "Not possible. Not possible. Chanchalam hi mana Krishna." Then what does the doctor say? Doctor says, "Okay, if you do not want my medicine, then there is a door. Walk out." Yes? Does somebody sitting here object to this? I'm just proposing that, you know, if a doctor gives medicine and the patient, the only reply that he has is, "Not possible. I'm not going to take this medicine." Most probably what will happen is the doctor will say, "Alright, then I'm incapable of helping you. This is what I had to help you, but you do not want it. So then what can be done?" Now I'll propose a second scenario. The same doctor is sitting, another person walks in and he also has his backache. Then he says, "Please help me." The doctor diagnoses his backache and then says, "Yes, I have diagnosed it. I have this medicine for you. Yellow pill in the morning, blue pill in the afternoon, and red pill in the evening." Then he says, he has this morose face. So the doctor says, "What happened?" He says, "Actually, you know, I'm so happy that you diagnosed my disease. I'm so happy that you want to give me medicine, and I'm ready to accept the medicine, but I have a difficulty." So what is the difficulty? "The difficulty is, you know, I sleep late because of my habits. You know, I'm a late sleeper. Then I wake up by 10 o'clock or something. So I'll miss my morning dose." So would you be kind enough to replace the morning dose with something in the afternoon so that the medicine, the effect is the same? Now what do you feel will be the doctor's response? A, he says, "Get out." The first person also said that. The first person said, "I cannot accept your medicine." And the second person essentially is saying the same thing. He's saying, "I cannot accept the medicine because of my habits." So we saw in the first case, the doctor said, "Get out. I cannot help you." So what do you feel in the second case also? Will that be the response? So what could be the alternative response in the second case? Think about it. How many people feel he'll give the same response? He'll say, "Okay, you know, if you're a late sleeper and you're late, you're a person who wakes up late and you want me to add the morning medicine to the afternoon medicine, it puts stress on me. Yes, now I have to figure out some another medicine which compensates for that morning medicine." So there is a chance that he will say, "Alright, then I can't help you." But is there any other possibility? Correct me if I'm wrong. I would propose that the second case, the doctor will say, "Alright, I'll think of something." Then he thinks, then he gives some alternative medicine. Why? There is a difference. The difference is, in the first case, the patient rejected the medicine itself. He did not reject the method in which the medicine was supposed to be taken. So there is a medicine and there is a way in which that medicine has to be taken. The first person rejected the medicine. He says, "No, it's not possible." And he did not even disclose the reason. He was not even ready to discuss with the doctor, "Do you have an alternative medicine? Is something else possible?" He just said, "It's not possible." So it kind of irritated the doctor. So here I am trying to help you and you're just outrightly rejecting it. Whereas in the second case, the patient, he accepted the medicine, but he honestly submitted his incapability. He's saying, "Your medicine is nice and your mood is nice, but it is my imperfection. It is my limitation that I have some bad habits and I sleep late and therefore I get up late and therefore I cannot take the morning dose." So here, you know, there is some humility involved. There is some honesty involved. He's saying, "I do not reject the medicine. However, please help me take the medicine. I cannot take it in the way you are suggesting." So the doctor understands, he likes my medicine, he wants my medicine, it's just that he's accepting his limitation. So he's okay, I'll give you something else. And he can give him something else. So till now, when Arjun was outrightly rejecting Krishna's advice, when Arjun was saying, these are my relatives, so I cannot fight them. So Krishna said, they're your relatives, they're my relatives. Aham bija pradapita. All the jivas, they are my children. So what, they are your relatives? They are my relatives and I want them to be killed. So, you know, Krishna is trying to pull him from the material platform to the spiritual platform. And what is Arjun doing? Arjun is trying to pull Krishna from the spiritual platform to the material platform. So this is nonsense. Then he calls him a pandita. Then he, you know, shakes him off. This is not possible. This is not good. In this case, in 6.35 of the Gita, Arjun is not rejecting the advice. Arjun is not saying, what nonsense? How can controlling the mind be good for the yogi? He's not rejecting the advice. What he's saying is, it's very difficult. It almost sounds impractical to me. Because who can control the mind? Mind is such a vague. It is such a powerful urge. When the mind goes here and there, you cannot control it. So in the second case, Arjun is not contradicting the philosophy of Krishna. He is contradicting the method of Krishna. He is saying, I understand for a yogi to advance, controlling the mind is inescapable. You have to control the mind. I accept it. But please give me some help. In my present condition, I cannot do it. He is accepting his own limitation. So what does Krishna say? Yes. Abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagyena chakruyate. He says, okay, I'll help you. There are two tips for you to control the mind. What is that? Practice and detachment. So this is what I meant by that second scenario in that doctor's case. The doctor thinks of an alternative medicine to help the patient. So now try to understand this. One time Krishna is very heavy with Arjun to the extent that he calls him Klebya. And in one instance, he's so kind-hearted, he's taking a risk by accepting the contradiction from Arjun. The risk is, for eternity people will say, Krishna is a duplicitous person. Now he said control the mind, and when there was an objection to control in the mind, he said yes, yes, asamshayam mahabhava. Yes, actually it's very difficult to control the mind. So is Krishna a self-contradictory person? No. This is the mood of Krishna. What is the mood of Krishna? Krishna comes to help us. But some of us reject the help of Krishna. So then Krishna becomes very heavy with such people. But some people, they say, Krishna, your help is very nice, but it is my limitation that I cannot accept your help. Then Krishna gives an alternative. So when Krishna came as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he said, Sarva Dharman Parityajya. Abandon all varieties of religion. Then he saw, you know, this Kali Yuga people, they cannot do Sarva Dharman Parityajya. They cannot even do one Dharman Parityajya. It's very difficult for them. So he said, okay, I'll give you an alternative. What is that? Enechi Aushadi Maya Nashibara Lagi. Hari Nama Mahamantra Lao Tumi Magi. Please chant, Grihe Thako Vane Thako Sada Hari Bole Dako. So that, you know, that mandate that Krishna gave in the Gita, Man Mana Bhav Mad Bhakto Mad Yaji Maham Namaskuru. No, people sink in the floor when they hear this. I have to become a devotee, then I have to constantly remember him, I have to constantly offer my obeisances to him, then I have to whatever I do, Yad Karoshi, Yad Ashnasi, Yad Juhosi, Dadasi, Yad. There are so many demands. It's very difficult. So Krishna understands this Kali Yuga people, very difficult. So he says, okay, this medicine is not working, and they are saying, you know, I want to be a devotee, but it's very difficult for me to offer obeisances again and again. It's very difficult for me to offer everything again and again. So it's okay. Please chant this Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. So we saw four examples of this contrasting emotions. Prahlad in shloka number 43 of the 7th canto 9th chapter. Then we saw shloka number 15 and 16 where again he showed contrasting emotions. Then we saw Krishna's contrasting emotions, Shashi Surya Netram, Anugraha and Nigraha. Then again we saw contrasting emotions of Krishna, that one time he is very strong with Arjun, and one time, you know, he is contradicting himself, exposing himself to be misunderstood by devotees. Somebody closer to us is Srila Prabhupada. How many of you have heard classes of Srila Prabhupada? When he gives lectures on the Bhagavatam and the Gita. Can you please raise your hand? Okay, so some of you have heard classes of Srila Prabhupada. How many of you feel Srila Prabhupada in his classes is really very strong? Can you please raise your hands? Okay, so all of you who raised your hands previously, all of you feel that, I also feel that, you know, when Prabhupada speaks on the Vyasasana, is really very strong. But there are so many cases when Srila Prabhupada is off the Vyasasana. Off the Vyasasana means he's not sitting on the Vyasasana. He's in his room or he has some personal interaction with somebody. And in those cases, the same Srila Prabhupada who's very heavy, who's very strong, who's very uncompromising in his talks, is the most accommodative. He's very embracing. So some instances are, one time Srila Prabhupada went to one temple. There are unlimited such stories, but something that comes to my mind is, one time Srila Prabhupada went to one temple, and as he entered the temple in the morning, he saw that there was one devotee who was standing at the main gate of the temple. And he was, you know, catching the bars of the gate, and he was in a very sorrowful face, in a very expecting kind of an expression on his face, and he was like looking at the temple. So Prabhupada thought after some time he will come in, but by afternoon time he did not come in. Then afternoon time again Prabhupada saw, he is still there at the gate. So then Prabhupada thought, let me get into this. So he called the temple president, asked him, what happened to this person, why is he standing at the gate? So the temple president is saying, this devotee, he was staying in the temple. But some days back, I just threw him out of the temple. So he said, why did you throw him out of the temple? He said, he broke some of the rules of the temple. And how can he break the rules of the temple? He is staying in the temple. He should not break the rules of the temple. So I just told him, I have banned him from coming inside the temple. Then Prabhupada said, okay. Then after some time, the temple president left. Then Prabhupada sent somebody to call that devotee. He said, what happened? Then he said, Prabhupada, you know, I have come from a very sinful background. Although I want to lead a pure life, but, you know, my past life has not been very pure. There are so many things that I have been exposed to. But I actually honestly repent all that. And even though I am staying in the temple, but sometimes, you know, those urges resurface. So, uncontrollably, something happened. I broke some rules. And then this temple president has banned me. Then Srila Prabhupada said, okay. Prabhupada said, for the next 6 months, you become my personal traveling companion. You travel with me wherever I go. So this devotee was zapped. So what was that? This temple president is not allowing me to come inside the temple. And Srila Prabhupada, the Acharya, the Guru, he is asking me to become his personal companion. Why? Because Srila Prabhupada understood the background from which the Western devotees came. So in India, there were so many pure Brahmins and devotees and, you know, so many pure people, expert in Sanskrit language, knowing the Gita shlokas by heart. Yes? But when Prabhupada asked them to help him, none of them helped. None of them offered any help. Prabhupada was just, there's this chapter in Prabhupada Lilamrit, crying alone in the wilderness. If you read that chapter, you'll also cry. He's asking for help from Indians. Please help me, my Guru Maharaj's order is there. No one helped him. So all that purity fell flat on its face. But he goes to the West, and there are the sincere boys, although coming from a sinful background, but when he asks them to help, they offer everything that they have and much more. So Prabhupada could understand, here are sincere boys and girls who, because of their upbringing, because of their culture in which they grow up, they were exposed to certain contamination, but they feel repentant for it and they are ready to accept the process that I give to them. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. So, he's telling this person, you travel with me. So now think about that person who's banned from the temple by the temple president and the guru says, you travel with me. Can you imagine what kind of feelings must be getting churned in his heart? So, the next 6 months this devotee travels with Prabhupada and he gets so much mercy from Prabhupada, he gets so much pure association of Prabhupada, all the so-called sins from his heart are washed away permanently. So now this Prabhupada, when he is giving classes, he is saying, anybody who does not follow the four regulative principles is not a human being. Human life starts when you start following the four regulative principles. If somebody is not following the four regulative principles, he is less than an animal. The animals are in this eating, sleeping, mating and defending. And that same Prabhupada, when a devotee honestly approaches him and says, my limitation, my shortcoming, but I am willing to rectify myself, Prabhupada says, come, travel with me. So is this a contradiction? Yes, this is a contradiction. How can you be supremely merciful and supremely strict? One time Srila Prabhupada was invited to some kind of a monastery, a Christian monastery, and one devotee had organized that program. So this devotee is remembering all these religious priests and so on, they are seated there in the audience. And Prabhupada started his class, the first line that he said is, we are what we eat. And the next line he says, and you people eat pigs. This is quite heavy. This is quite strong. And the devotee who organized that program in that monastery, you know, he was thinking now, how do I face the organizers? So he, you know, he is thinking, I want to hide myself. Hmm. But Prabhupada kept on speaking and he actually spoke strongly, not to disturb them, not to agitate them. He wanted to make a point that those who represent God, those who represent religion, a higher standard of purity is expected from them. What is that higher standard of purity? Purity even in eating. So if my own habits are not pure, what can I talk about purity and what purity will I teach others? So Prabhupada was saying, you are all representing God in whatever faith, religion that you are practicing. You must rise yourself. You must raise your standards of purity. So in order to give that strong message, Prabhupada spoke strongly. But what is in his heart? His heart is crying out for the sad state of all of us. All of us who are facing struggles in our anartha nivritti. All of us who feel, you know, my chanting, I hope it would have been better. Go and pray to Prabhupada. Prabhupada understands you much more than Krishna understands you. Another instance is, you know, one time there was this Prabhupada Appearance Day festival in our temple. And one of Srila Prabhupada's female disciples had come and she was offering an offering to Srila Prabhupada. And she was remembering one incident that happened in London one time. So Prabhupada and some of his disciples were staying in Bhaktivedanta Manor, which is around 1 hour of drive from central London. And they had organized some program in the most prestigious area of London, which is Oxford Street. So the program was a late evening program. 8 o'clock the program was going to start. And Prabhupada and his disciples, they reached the venue a little early. Probably they reached around 7 o'clock or something. So when Prabhupada went to the hall, the venue, it was all empty. So Prabhupada would usually never take prasad before the program. But that day because he reached early and none of the participants are there, so what to do now 1 hour? So then Prabhupada asked, is there prasadam? So they said, yes, there is prasadam. So what is the prasadam? Well, sometimes for some programs you keep simple prasadam. So they said, we have the full dinner prasadam for you. So they had puris, rice, dal and so on. So Prabhupada said, what is for sweet? So they said, gulab jamun. So Prabhupada said, very nice. He said, bring gulab jamuns. So this Mataji is explaining that she brought 2 gulab jamuns. So Prabhupada said, why only 2? So, you know, she thought, old person, late night, is like evening time, and then before the program, so probably Prabhupada will just taste it. So Prabhupada said, no, I like gulab jamuns, bring gulab jamuns. And those gulab jamuns were prepared by this Mataji. So she was very happy. She kept on bringing. So she was saying, if I'm not wrong, that day Prabhupada did something like 12 or 13 gulab jamuns. In a very happy mood. So Mataji is very happy. Mataji is saying, I cooked gulab jamuns, I brought them, and Prabhupada is so happy. And then after those gulab jamuns, by the time the program started, lot many people came. So there was full attendance. So sometimes, you know, when somebody like Prabhupada is speaking and there are only a few people seated, it does not look good. Is it not? It does not do justice to the person's presence. But in this particular program, the whole hall was full. So Prabhupada was very happy that people came to hear from him. So everything is going on very nice. Everything is going on very happy, happy, happy. And then after the program, they sit in the car. And Prabhupada is seated in the front chair of the car. And this disciple, Mataji, is sitting in the back seat, but diagonally across. So Mataji looks out of the window of the car, and this is Oxford Street. So something like the most posh, polished area of London. So you know, there are all these shops which are very beautiful to look at. All the big brands are there. Every single man is dressed perfectly. Suit, tie and everything. Every single female on the street is dressed in a very nice dress. Everything is very beautiful. Everything is very nice. Prim and proper. The houses are very nice. There is no visible fault in that sight that appears out of the window of that car as the car is leaving the venue from Oxford Street. And this Mataji, as she's looking, you know, she's looking. Everything is very beautiful to look at. And as her face turns, she looks at Prabhupada. And Prabhupada is also looking. And she, to her horror, she sees a tear in Prabhupada's eyes. So now she quickly starts, you know, everything is going on fast. She said, what went wrong? The gulab jamuns, when he ate them, he was quite happy. It did not seem that I had spoiled the gulab jamuns. And then we asked him, what do you want? So it's not that we forced gulab jamuns on him. People also came for the program. We reached on time. We did not make him late for the program. Yes, so it's usually very difficult for the speaker when he reaches late. It puts him in anxiety. So none of the events that day were pointing to the tear. So with great courage, in a very soft voice, Mataji thought, maybe it's some my mistake. Then she asked, Prabhupada, you're crying? Then Prabhupada just spoke one line, looking out of the window. He said, we should help them. So, you know, this Mataji is remembering as she's offering her tribute to Prabhupada that to her eye, what seemed to be the perfection of life. Everyone is rich. Everything is very polished. Everything is very beautiful. Prabhupada saw through it. Prabhupada could detect the hollowness of that life because that life was without God. So everyone on that Oxford Street had money, had big long cars, had beautiful companions, had very nice homes in multi-storied buildings. But none of those people had God in their lives. They were trying to find happiness on the sensual platform. Seeing that hollowness, Prabhupada had a tear in his eyes. And then she was saying how, you know, the same sight which appears to be very beautiful to us can seem to be very depressing to a devotee because there is no God consciousness there. One time they took Srila Prabhupada to Switzerland and there was this mountain called St. Moritz. And one devotee showed this to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, this is St. Moritz. So Prabhupada said, this is not St. Moritz, this is St. Hellish. So why? Because Prabhupada said, this is just full of ice. Switzerland is just full of ice. He said, there are no people here, so whom will we preach to? We have the message of God with us, and this message of God, if accepted by people, can raise them to the highest standards of happiness. They can actually perfect the human form of life, go back home, back to Godhead. But because Switzerland is full of ice and it is so extremely cold, very few people stay in Switzerland. So it's because there are no people to whom we can speak about the Gita, this is St. Hellish, he said. Now many people I know travel all the way to Switzerland to appreciate the beauty of Switzerland. So no offense to them, but we are just offering you a perspective that something that is very beautiful to this eye is hellish to a pure devotee. Why? Because there is nobody there who can listen to the glorification of God that he is carrying in his heart. So this is what we mean when we say that Prabhupada is equally heavy on the Vyasasana, but he is equally soft-hearted when he is off the Vyasasana. So would you call it a contradiction or would you call it, you know, there is a wonderful ability in Krishna, there is this wonderful ability in Lord Narasimhadev, there is this wonderful ability in Prahlad, and there is this wonderful ability in Srila Prabhupada. They can handle two contrasting emotions simultaneously. Which emotion comes out depends on how we approach them. So if we approach Krishna like the first patient and say, I do not want your medicine, then we'll get the Surya Netra. But if we say, Krishna, your solution is right, however, it is my limitation that, you know, it's difficult for me to implement, we'll get the Shashi Netra. When we are facing problems in our life, how do we go about it? So if you know, in the modern automobile industry, there is something called as a GPS. GPS is Global Positioning System. So you switch it on, and then you say, I am here in this part of Bombay, and I want to travel to this part of Bombay, and this GPS will tell you. So there are two things that the GPS shows. It tells you your position, and it tells you how far you are from your goal. So, to understand what are we into, what is the wonderful facility that we have, I would like to propose that let us switch on our physical GPS. What is this physical GPS? In the universe where we stay, where are we? What is our location? Two things. Where are we and how far we are from the goal? So our goal is Krishna Prema. Our goal is to go back to the spiritual world. But where are we right now? In the universe, where are we? We are in the middle planetary systems. It means the heavenly planetary systems are above us, and the Patal Lok and like that, the lower planetary systems are below us. What is the implication of this? The implication of this is the heavenly planetary systems are Bhog Bhumi. The heavenly planetary systems are full of happiness. And the lower planetary systems are Dukkha Bhumi. They are like full of distress. So if we are in the middle, what can we say about our happiness and our distress? The more you go on the upper side, your life will only be full of happiness. The more you go on the lower side, your life will only be full of distress. And we are in the middle. So what will be our life? Some happiness, some distress. Does this give hope that our life can never be full of happiness? And our life also simultaneously can never be full of distress. Does it give hope? Because when happiness comes in our life, we never think about it. But when distress comes in our life, we start thinking, oh, I am a devotee and I worship Krishna. I am a devotee of Krishna. Why is there distress in my life? Hold your breath. Wait for a few moments. Why? Because we are in the middle planetary systems. Middle planetary systems means kabhi khushi, kabhi gham. So if you are in a miserable condition right now, wait for some time. Automatically, the GPS is such. You are not in the lower planetary systems, you are in the middle planetary systems, Prithvi. So by the nature of your location in the Brahmanda, in the universe, happiness is just around the corner. Don't get disturbed by distress and don't get disturbed by happiness. Focus on bhakti. This is what even Narad Muni speaks to Vyasadeva in the first canto, fifth chapter. He says, na labhyate brahmatam upariyadha. He says, something that is offered in the human form of life in this middle planetary systems is not offered in the higher planetary systems. It is not offered in the lower planetary systems. What is that? A chance to do devotional service to Krishna. But some of us who get very easily disturbed by emotions. Just look at him. Why is he looking at me like this? Why did he talk to me like this? Why does she treat me like this? No, we are all caught in a cyclone of emotions. Constantly thinking, why this, why this, why this? Meanwhile, we forget the physical GPS of ourselves is kabhi khushi, kabhi gham. So let people give what they want to give to you. You have the choice to respond. What is that? No response. No response is also another response. I choose to not respond. This is my response. So you speak ill about me, I am what I am, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You speak glories of me, I am what I am, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I am not going to be bothered by this. I have to go on. And my second solution to this is you also switch on your spiritual GPS. So what is the spiritual GPS? Ever heard, we hear that we are in this parampara. What is parampara? Parampara means Supreme Lord Krishna, he instructed this imperishable science to his disciple. In our case, it is Lord Brahma. Then Brahma instructed it to Narad Muni. Narad Muni instructed it to Vyasadeva and so on. One guru instructs his shishya. The shishya practices it. He becomes a guru, passes it on. Yes? So right now, what is our spiritual GPS? Our spiritual GPS is, what is our location in the parampara? In the parampara, our location is, there are lot many personalities above us. Guru Maharaj is there, Srila Prabhupada is there, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada is there, and so on.
But are you at the lowest end of parampara? Is there somebody in your life who needs some help from you and you could be a teacher to him? Or are you the lowest in the group of devotees in which you belong to? Is there somebody in your life who can learn from you? Is there somebody in your life whom you feel, you know a few things more than him and you can teach him? This is how you chant. This is how you read the Gita. This is how you offer obeisances. This is how you pray. Is there somebody in your life like that? So if there is somebody in your life like that, it means there is somebody below you and there is somebody above you. So if you constantly deal with people below you, then you will become proud because the people below you constantly glorify you. Aapke jaisa kaun hai? And so it's very troublesome actually. So anytime, you are looking down, yes, you are in parampara, there are personalities above you and there are people below you. So when you look down, all that comes. So you get frustrated with it. And also there are a lot of problems that they give to you. I have this problem, this problem, this problem. And you have to deal with somebody else's problems as if you did not have your own problems. So sometimes when you get frustrated with this, all that negativity that comes, just do one thing. You're looking down like this in the parampara and your neck is getting strained like this. So what do you do? Does it happen that sometimes in the library we are reading something 2 hours, 3 hours, and then the neck starts paining? So very natural response. If your neck starts paining like this by looking down constantly, what do you do? I do like this. Is it not? So in parampara, when there is so much glorification, flattery, and problems that come from below, and then you think, "Bah, pray, it's heavy ho raha hai abhi." So do one thing. Just do naturally. What is that? Look up. So when you look up in the parampara, whom will you see? You see Guru Maharaj. You see Srila Prabhupada. By looking at their wonderful, compassionate faces, all your misery will evaporate. Then sometimes what happens is, you're looking constantly up. How nice. How beautiful. How merciful. Guru Maharaj is so merciful. Prabhupada is so merciful. Then what happens? We start taking that mercy also cheaply. We just want to keep receiving the smiles, but we do not want to actually do something in our lives in a practical way. Just recently, one of our team of brahmacharis had gone for book distribution. And one of the devotees phoned me one time. He was distributing books. So he was telling me how, I asked him, how is book distribution going on? So he said, it's very tough. So then I asked him, what is tough? You're not getting permissions? Or, is prasad the problem? You're not getting proper prasad at the proper time? Because they were staying outside the temple. They were not staying in the temple. So for a brahmachari to stay outside the temple, he has his own issues. So he said, no, nothing like that. He said, the host has given us a separate room and he's given us sufficient warm clothes. It was very cold there. And, he's a good devotee, so he offers to the deities and we are getting nice hot prasadam early in the morning. So all these facilities were very nice. And I asked him, so then what is your problem when you are saying that it's very difficult? So he said, what happens is every day in the morning, we approach a college and then we go to the principal and then we tell him we have these spiritual books and we want to distribute them in your college. So can you kindly help us? So I said, okay, then. And he said, sometimes the principals are not very favorable. Sometimes the principals are of some different religion. So one or two cases he told me how that principal became very heavy. One principal in fact came running behind him and said, get out, how dare you ask me? So whatever reasons. So then I asked him, is this the reason of your unhappiness? So he said, yes, this is the reason of my unhappiness. Then I was just sharing with him. I asked him, so can I say that every day you want sweet rice? So he said, no, I don't want sweet rice. I am taking rice dal sabji. So no, I am not talking of that food sweet rice. I am talking of sweet, wherever you go for a permission, you want a very favorable response from that principal. You want him to say, aiye, aiye, hamare ghar mein aap padhare hain, hamare college mein padhare hain, aho bhagya hamara, thoda agarbatti leke aata hoon. In Marathi, there is a saying, sant mahatma yeti ghara tochi diwali dasara. You have come to our, this is our Diwali and this is our Dasara. Do you expect something like that? So then this devotee thought for a while and he said, actually yes, this is Kali Yuga. And we are distributing Gita in Kali Yuga. to non-devotees. We are actually doing outreach. So what do you expect? There will be some opposition, is it not? So then he understood that yes, in fact, if you face opposition from some people, then that is a sign that you are actually preaching. But if you keep talking to devotees, devotees are always very glad to receive what you are getting. Yes, real struggle is when you catch hold of a new person and tell him, you are not this body, you are spirit soul, and he says, kuch bhi kya? That is where your basics are tested. So then we were discussing with him. I told him that, you know, even in the life of Lord Krishna himself, it was not all just sweet rices. From the beginning of his life, he has to kill demons. His own mama, Kamsa, he was the biggest enemy of Krishna. So it's not that because Ram is the Supreme Lord and Krishna is the Supreme Lord, everything is very soft and sweet and, you know, everything, everywhere he goes, people welcome him. And he also had to struggle. He's showing us. So if we have to struggle, what is the problem? So the point was, when you look down too much, you become depressed. So when you become depressed, you look up. But if you keep looking up and you just keep expecting very sweet things to happen in your life, then you become sentimental. So when this neck also gets strained, then you look down. So when you look down, sometimes you understand what are the problems of people junior to you. When it becomes too much, you spend some time with seniors. So when you spend some time with seniors, you receive a lot of mercy, you receive a lot of help. Go with that mercy, go with that help and help some juniors. When that becomes too much, go to seniors. Yes, go up and down in the parampara. Nice. Life is very good. Can I share one small incident from a close relative's life of mine? Yes. So this is my sister. She has a baby who's roughly 1 year old, and I just thought that I can connect something here. So recently, her baby is maybe 13 months old or something like that. So she took her, the baby is a female, so she took her to a doctor, and they have these different injections that have to be given at different times. So this doctor, this child specialist, he takes out a big, long syringe. And a small baby looks at that syringe, but she does not understand it's going to go inside. So she's looking in a very innocent way. And this doctor, you know, just pushes it inside. And, you know, it's a very horrible experience for that child. The child gives out a loud cry, like that. Yes. And now everyone is thinking what to do. So my sister, she was telling me this. So then she said, oh, did some ant bite you? Where is the ant? Where is the ant? And she started looking like this. Where the baby got a syringe and she's crying out, loudly she's crying out. So my sister is saying, oh, where is that ant? And she starts searching. So the baby, you know, she has that pain, but she thought, oh, my mother wants to help me. My mother is looking for that. So that baby also started looking for that ant. So she also started looking here and there. And she completely forgot about that pain. So this child specialist, doctor, you know, he looked at my sister and he said, what was that? So then he asked my sister, have you done some course in child psychology? This is a real incident. So my sister obviously has not done any course in child psychology. So she said, no, I have not done. So why are you asking? So he says, I am a child specialist. This is my business, to give injections to small babies of 1 year old and 2 year old. I said, the only thing that I have heard from them is, wah, like that. Yes. And the only thing I heard from the mothers is, No, don't cry. I'll give you a chocolate, I'll give you a cake, and I'll give you this, and I'll give you that. But the doctor said, it never works. So then my sister just told me this, and then it got me thinking that why, when the mother says, I'll give you a chocolate, I'll give you a ice cream, and all that, it does not work. That was the doctor's observation. And when my sister said, oh, where is the ant? Let me think. And, you know, it worked. So what was the difference? So something that came to my mind was, that when a mother says, don't worry, I'll give you an ice cream, what she is doing is, she's telling him, see, as far as the pain is concerned, right now, at this moment, there is pain in your life, that syringe. As far as the pain is concerned, I can't help you. What I can do is, I can give you some pleasure tomorrow. So the baby says, pleasure tomorrow, but what about the pain today? Idhar dukh raha uska kya? Abhi kal cake milega, malum nahi kya hoga. But the response that my sister gave is, you are in pain today, I am with you. I will search that ant for you. And she began searching. So, you know, sometimes when you are in pain and somebody says, oh, you are in pain? Yes. Okay, I'll help you tomorrow. Say, excuse me, did you hear the word today? Did you hear the word now? I need help now. I am in pain now. Yes. So, you have people who are capable of helping you, but they do not have time for you. So they say, I'll help you tomorrow. On the other hand, sometimes somebody may not be capable of helping you, but he just says, oh, you are in pain? Come, I'm with you. I'll share my shoulder with you. Please tell me what are your problems. That touches the heart, is it not? I'll again ask you a question. Sorry to make you think. I'll ask you a question. I am giving you two scenarios. There is one child who is an orphan and he stays in an orphanage. So in this orphanage, it's a rich orphanage. So he gets breakfast, lunch, dinner, he gets clothes. On the festival days, he gets some special, you know, some celebrity visits him. All those things are happening in that orphanage. And there's another child who is born in the family of beggars. So that beggar family is living on the road, practically. So both are children of the same age. Who do you think is better? How many of you feel the orphan is better because he gets his clothes on time, he gets food on time, you know, he has a nice home to stay? And how many of you feel that the beggar is better than the orphan? How many of you feel the orphan is better? How many of you feel that the beggar is better? Okay, so quite many number of hands. And it's a little over time, but I can spend time here. I'm here after the class. But I wanted to offer something and see if it is agreeable to you. The orphan, his physical needs are met in the orphanage. Whatever he wants, he gets. He only does not get affection. The in charge of the orphanage, he will never come and spend time with the orphan. What happened? Are you in pain? I'm with you. So apart from emotional fulfillment, he gets everything in the orphanage. The beggar child does not have clothes to wear. Sometimes he is hungry. He does not have food in the stomach. One thing is for sure, he has parents. He has a mother and he has a father. So sometimes, you know, when his stomach is hungry, he did not get food since morning. So he is crying. He comes in the evening to his mother and father. He says, Mummy, bahut bhook lagi hai. Subah se kisne bheek nahi diya. You know, my stomach is paining because I did not get food. What does the mother say? The mother says, come close, come. She embraces the child. And she says, don't worry, I will give you something. But she herself is a beggar. She herself did not get anything. But sometimes, you know, when you are in pain, that warm embrace from somebody who cares for you, the warm embrace from somebody who loves you, who somebody is, you know, who feels for you, that does the trick. Is it not? So both are in a problematic situation. He is in a problematic situation vis-a-vis emotions, the orphan. But his physical needs are met. And the beggar, his emotional needs are met. He is never alone. Any problem in life, he can turn to his mother and father. But his physical needs are not met. But going by this, you know, we put that question openly to this crowd and we could see an overwhelming majority which said that the beggar child with an empty stomach is much better than the orphan child with an empty heart. Yes? So now, coming back to our original situation, we were saying, switch on your spiritual GPS. So why am I mentioning this story? Is that all of us, we could say we are like that beggar child. There are a lot of problems in our life. Sometimes there are financial problems. Sometimes there are family problems. Sometimes there are inner problems. But within all that, we have the father, we have the mother, we have the acharyas, we have senior devotees, we have Guru Maharaj, we have Srila Prabhupada, who are very, very compassionate. They are always there waiting for all of us here. Whenever we want, we can come here, pray to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada is always giving darshan. At least Gopinath's darshan sometimes closes. Gopinath is always there. So come, pray, offer your heart. Reveal your heart. Pet bhuka hai. Bahut problems hai jeevan mein. But seeing the beautiful smile of Gopinath, remembering the compassionate heart of Srila Prabhupada, we know they are always there to help us. They may not give us money. So if there's a financial crisis in my life, You know, I feel, you know, I want money. So Prabhupada may not be able to give you money. Gopinath may not be able to give you money. But one thing is for sure. Whenever you need them, they are there for you. And in their own mysterious ways, they can also help you in a way that you can appreciate. Is it not? So, in essence, what I was saying was, when we have shelter above us, when we know there are some people in our life who care for us, who genuinely feel for us, even though we may be going through the roller coaster ride of different problems in our life, somewhere inside there is a security. There is this one small place called 7K Munshi Marg, Chowpatty, Bombay. The whole world may sometimes mistreat me, sometimes cheat me, sometimes abuse me. But in this one small place called 7K Munshi Marg, there are some personalities who are always there, who are always ready to embrace me, who are always ready to, you know, they are always there for me. So when we have this feeling, we say, okay, let problems come. I cannot stop the problems. But what I can do is I can respond to those problems by taking greater shelter. So if we can do this, I would say this is the art of handling contrasting emotions. Sometimes there is negativity from bottom, but then you balance it with positivity from top. When too much positivity in our life, then sometimes we should go out and distribute books, get some negativity also. That keeps us balanced. So we'll quickly revise what we discussed. We were seeing how emotional fulfillment is something which is very imperative for humans. Animals can do without it, but we can't do without it. Then we discussed how Prahlad, in two instances, he offers two very contrasting emotions. Then we saw he gets it from Krishna. Krishna in 11.19 and 6.35, he also gives contrasting emotions. Then we saw from Srila Prabhupada's life how Srila Prabhupada also has contrasting emotions. But then we explained, actually they are not contrasting emotions. They are, this wonderful ability of Krishna and the pure devotees. They can have both moods simultaneously. So if we want to advance in our lives, we have to learn from them. We also should learn the art of handling contrasting emotions. If we meet somebody who is in distress, we might have our own distress. We should learn to keep our distress in the pocket and talk with these people who have distress and be able to give them hope. If somebody comes crying to you and you say, Ruk, main bhi rota hun thoda, that does not serve the purpose. Yes? You cry later. But when somebody comes crying to you, yes, try to help him. In trying, in giving, we receive. And when there is too much happiness in your life, then you say, itna kyun hai? So go out and share. Spend some time with somebody who is distressed. So in this way, we can also learn the art of handling contrasting emotions. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai.
Do you have people not just everyone participating?